This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
At Discount Tire, we know your time is valuable. Get 30% shorter average wait time when you buy and book online. Did you know Discount Tire now sells wiper blades? Check out our current deals at DiscountTire.com or stop in and talk to an associate today. Discount Tire.
Let's get you taken care of.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network. This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
This week on The Marketer's Report, Patrizio Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct to Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on building trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the data you need to grow. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Welcome to a Celtic State of Mind. It's Thursday, I'm Paul John Dykes, and today I'm joined by JP Mason and Declan McConville for the Axon Bulletin. JP, as always, you're sitting there with your King Tut's mug. Hopefully we'll be into live venues soon enough. You've also got a Celtic jersey over your right shoulder, and a curious number has appeared on your bookshelf. Talk to me about the number 110.
Well, somebody mentioned that we should do this, or maybe it was yourself, actually. Should we get like a number appearing in the screen? So I looked it up and figured out that, sorry, Tony, but it is actually over 100 days until the first Champions League qualifier. It is the 20th of July. We will enter at the second qualifying round as runners-up of the league. And so, yeah, 110 days it is until our Champions League qualifiers begin.
Even though it's over 100 days, that is still frightening. Declan McConville, do we have enough time to rebuild this fractured Celtic Football Club?
Enough time, I don't know. I mean, the wheels are in motion just now. You see the ticker tape down the bottom, but we're running with, you know, we've got a head of football operations that's departed the club. There's going to be a massive, massive turnover. Whether we've got enough time is all going to be dependent on how quickly we get a new set up in the door and what new players we get in quickly. But, you know, that second round qualifier should be okay, but it's when you start to get into even the third round. But we've found it in previous seasons that we've even faltered there. So there's a big, big task ahead of us, and I hope that we do get through it, because it'd be great to hear those Champions League music back at Celtic Park again.
When was the last time we heard it, Declan?
Anderlecht, December 2017.
That's frightening. That's frightening. Now, we were talking about specific numbers, JP, before we came on live, and how you associate certain things to a number. And I don't know if it's sometimes a bit of the old paranoia. I remember the movie with Jim Carrey, The Number 23. He starts seeing it. I wish I saw numbers on my way to my work and then put a lottery ticket on, and they all came up. But 110, next time I see you, it'll be 103. But you said that the numbers that you associate yourself with is the obvious one, 67, 88. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, 88. If I ever see 88, you know, anywhere, I just immediately think of the year I started supporting Celtic or following Celtic, and then obviously 1888 as well, and Gary Hooper, 88. I see too, because he's squad number.
What was your squad number when you played at Celtic Park? What was your number?
14, Paul Lambert.
Was it? Because when I played, I won't ask you that because I don't think you've made your debut yet, but when I played, it was...
I'm too young.
I went for the number 71. Because it was 7-1 Hampden and the Sun. So I went for 71, and it's a jersey, like yourself, I was allowed to take it home. The reason I ask is because I know you're wearing a St. Pauli or Sancta Pauli top, and I might have mentioned this on the pod before, but you were unaware that I had a couple of St. Pauli fans over. This was a few years ago now. I remember the game, actually. We played Hearts, we beat them 1-0, and Samaras scored, and we wore that 125th anniversary white kit that day. Remember, they had the black and the green hooped socks.
Oh, yeah.
Really smart kit. We didn't wear it enough, if you ask me. But we had a couple of Germans over to give them the whole Celtic experience. We went down the Gallagate, took them into the boozers, etc. Went up to the park, spent some time outside the stadium on the match day. And of course, they wanted to go into the Celtic Superstore to get some merch. And they pointed out to me that all the merch had number 88 on it. Wasn't really a good way to have a partnership with the German fans. Now, this was at a time where we had half and half St. Pauli scarves in a Celtic shop, and they said that it was because it would signify HH, and I'm thinking, well, that's not a bad thing for Celtic either, but Heil Hitler. 88 yeah. And HH, and they were saying that neo-Nazis, even to this day in Germany, would sign their name and then put HH after it. So you think the connotations to walking into a shop and seeing HH or 88 all over the place, obviously they weren't going to buy that kind of merch and take it back to Germany.
Yeah.
But it had never occurred to me, and obviously had never occurred to the merchandising team at Celtic, who were trying to build a relationship with our German fans.
Leave it to the fans to cultivate the relationship instead of...
Absolutely. Now, as I said, JP, you're drinking out of a King Tut's Wawa hot mug. When are we going to get back in to see a gig? Is your band lined up for anything this year?
Not this year, no. But then... That's just because the size of the gigs, really. I would like to think that maybe by the end of the year there'll be gigs in places like the Barrowland again. But trying to get a date in the Barrowland right now, if you're moving gigs, is almost impossible. Like for the next 2 years, it's just so hard to get, especially to get back-to-back dates as well. So I guess it just depends what the government come up with in the next few weeks about capacity legislation and things like that, because that's ultimately going to affect whether or not we can open, you know, if we're allowed to open. But if we have to open, and we have to open with social distancing, then it's a busted flush until such time as we can open with capacity. So
see, when we think about, you know, people are talking about a lost generation of football players who were with youth teams, JP, and have not been able to train, have not been able to play for some time. And I've spoken to some coaches who actually had the fear that they would be lost to the game. A lot of the players are already said to their youth coaches, I'm not coming back, because, you know, they can't play, they can't train, and they've lost interest, which saddens me greatly. Do you think it would be the same with music, with the amount of venues that we're losing? Are we also losing a lot of bands, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I think there's bands that have been forced into you know, choosing different paths, you know, albeit maybe on a temporary basis, but that might lead to a permanent basis, in which case they'll, you know, reassess their priorities, and maybe a band or pursuing what they're doing with the band might not be, you know, paramount in their thinking anymore. So absolutely, yeah, I think it's a scary thought. I just hope that that maybe if there's any, you know, attrition, that we gain bands as well throughout this period, where bands sort of pop up that you've never heard of before, that have been inspired by the situation or inspired to go and make a band or join a band in this sort of odd downtime that we've had, where nobody's been able to do the normal things.
I mean, at the studio here, we've got 13 live sessions, acoustic sessions, lined up, and we're really looking forward to starting to get them recorded once we're allowed to get people back in the studio. Declan, I know you're a big music fan yourself. When was the last gig that you went to? What was the last gig, the last band you saw live?
It was Liam Gallagher at the Hydro in November 2019 was the last gig I was at. Class gig, start to finish, absolutely immense. I withered in the old Noel and Liam stuff. I was quite Team Noel for a long time, and then Noel just became a bit of a, to use one of a better expression, a dick, and then fully Team Liam now. So
I just thought Declan has gone through his wealth of vocabulary there, yeah. You know, and then he comes out with that. And to be honest, I can't think of a better word. But I've got to say, you know, in terms of the music, it's difficult for me to put a line between the two of them. I wasn't at that gig. That was where the DMAs supporting that night.
I went
to the Aberdeen, didn't I?
Aberdeen, yeah. Aye. DMAs for the support.
I couldn't get a ticket for the Glasgow gig. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting back to football and music. You know, they're the two biggies for me. But we've been talking a lot about, obviously, and you, JP, 110 days to the Champions League. This morning, thankfully, we were invited, a Celtic State of Mind were invited, to take part once again in a press conference, a Celtic Park press conference, where we go in and we dial in virtually. And today was a wee bit different because we were blessed to be speaking to Jodie Bartle, who's a centre-half for the women's team. So they're playing on Sunday. That's their comeback game. They've had a friendly, but it's their comeback game on Sunday, and they'll be playing Glasgow City. Now, if you think Celtic have dominated Scottish football, what about Glasgow City? They've won 13 leagues in a row. Now, Celtic are sitting third in the table at the moment, with Rangers sitting top, interestingly enough. But Celtic play Glasgow City at 4:15 on Sunday, and the game will be screened live on BBC Alba. We got the opportunity to speak to Jodie. It was a very interesting press conference. I will only use a Celtic State of Mind's question rather than all the other guys who were there who might want to put it on their own platform. But we're in there with the STV news team, etc. If Celtic beat Glasgow, they will leapfrog them into second place. They've brought in 4 new players during the winter months of isolation, 3 internationalists. And Sarah Teagarden, who's been out for a year, has returned after an ACL injury. So I got an opportunity to catch up with Jodie, and here's what we said. Good morning, Jodie. Paul John Dykes from Celtic State of Mind. Now, the match against Glasgow City is being screened on BBC Alba following the news that the Women's Super League have signed a kind of groundbreaking deal as well for broadcasting. How clear an indication do you feel that this is, that the women's game is moving forward at a relentless pace?
Oh, it's great news. When I saw that with the Super League, you know, that's setting a precedence for British football. I think, you know, the fact that there's going to be the rights and there's going to be showing of every single Super League game. And I think that will then mean that if they've got the rights for the Super League, that'll mean that Championship games will also be able to get shown through the other means that it was before, I think through the FA player. So that means that more football is going to be watched and is going to be available for people to see. And then obviously up here in Scotland, it said there's so much more coverage. And, you know, that's all that we can ask for at the moment, is more to be happening, and that is happening. So it's great to see that There's going to be people watching from everywhere, you know, all over the country, in other countries, and it's available, especially at the moment when we haven't got fans. We don't know when fans are going to be coming back in. I know in England that there's some set dates for when fans might be able to go back in and watch games. Up here, we don't know. So we need to make sure that people can still support us and they have the means in order to watch us. So, yeah, it's a great thing to see, definitely.
Thanks and good luck on Sunday, Jodie. So, will you be tuning in, guys? Tuning in on Sunday, BBC Alba, 4 o'clock?
Actually, I probably will. You know,
as Easter Sunday, so as, you know, don't know.
You can watch it over your Easter eggs, Declan, I'm sure. It is interesting, you know, I think it's only right that, you know, the women's game is getting this coverage. I mean, it was a groundbreaking deal down south, of course, and as these things always seem to be up here, we're a wee bit further behind. Although I think another 7 of the women's games are going to be shown between now and the end of the season on BBC Alba. It's entertaining. It's something that Celtic have invested massively in. You know, we're now a professional side. We've redeveloped Barrowfield, and partly for youths to train at, but also for the women's team to train at as well. And I just think it's one of these things that I have got an interest in, and I think I will start tuning in to these games. It's something that perhaps there's been a newfound interest in it during the lockdown, during the process of not having loads of football that you can go and watch, that when it actually returns and you can go and watch it, I can see myself doing it. JP, what's your thoughts on that?
I mean, I don't see why we wouldn't invest heavily in it, because if there's an interest, you know, from women to play football, then we should be there given an outlet to do that. Because, you know, I've definitely seen it in the 32 years that I've been going to watch Celtic. I've definitely seen the numbers increase the other way in terms of it not being male dominated. You know, there's a lot of females at the football anymore now, should I say. And, you know, if they're going to the football and they're enjoying the experience and becoming, you know, massive Celtic fans, then if any of them are interested in playing it, then they're going to have that passion to play. And what a great outlet to do it and wearing a Celtic strip while you're doing it. I'd love to do that.
See, the big thing for me as well, when I think back, and obviously having done a lot of interviews over the last 12 months with people who are involved in youth football, JP, I just see the benefit, you know, of kids being involved in sport, not just football, but obviously in sport. And I think back to the time where I played, not to any level, but all the benefits that I got from being part of a team that travelled all over the place, not just in Scotland, but further afield. And, you know, there was a maturity, I think, that developed within kids who were involved in sport. There certainly was a maturity. You were dealing a lot more away from your school teachers with adults, because obviously everybody who was involved in coaching the team and looking after the side, particularly when you went on European trips, they were all adults. So I think there was a maturity, there was a discipline, the team ethic, the hard working kind of ethic as well. So I think obviously the benefits are, you know, always going to far outweigh the success and having a cabinet full of trophies and all that kind of thing. My biggest criticism's always been with the coaches trying to live their dreams through the kids, and it's all about winning, it's all about having the trophies, whereas really it's a lot deeper than that. It's all about the social aspect. You know, you think about it, Declan, a lot of these kids, you know, it's an escapism for them. And then once they get to a certain age, you know, there could be a choice between going to training or going and standing on a street corner and running about with a gang and getting into mischief and petty crime, which can lead to worse and worse crime. And I think that, you know, it's only right that females have got that exact same opportunity, Declan.
Yeah, the opportunities need to be there. And again, we've spoken a lot in this podcast about being what would be described as an elite football club. And if you look around the world, at, say, for instance, Manchester City, their investment in women's football has been incredible. And again, it's all about the modern game, and women's football should just have as an important place as men's football at this point in time. That there's no reason why it can't be, because, you know, we live in a world now where it's 50-50 split, so women should just have as much a chance and opportunity in football as men. And that's even been seen with Celtic appointing Fran Alonso as a manager. You know, that's for the guy that worked at Southampton. It was quite an ambitious move, and it seems to be working out. So the more the merrier for me. And I would hope that once we start to get back, that they even start to pull in a bit of a crowd, because I think there is an interest there. The Women's World Cup, I tuned into that when it was on. I think that was, it'll be 2 years ago in the summer now. And yeah, I think the interest is there. And girls should be given that avenue to get into professional sport, if it's football or whatever else.
I think it's a great point. The World Cup, the way that was broadcast and promoted, Declan, got a lot of people interested who maybe up to that point didn't have the same interest. So the broadcasting deals that are happening down south and the one that we've got up here, albeit a lot smaller with BBC Alba, are massive. So tune in, 4 o'clock Sunday night, if, unlike Declan, you don't have other things in your diary, because obviously you're a very sociable person, Declan McConville. Biggest story in the world of Celtic overnight was something we actually touched on last week, JP. You remember? We were talking about, once international football gets out the way, we reckoned that further moves would be happening within the corridors of Celtic Park. That has happened, with confirmation yesterday that Nick Hammond has stepped down. He has resigned and obviously will move on to pastures new. He's been at the club since 2019. I'm going to ask you the question, JP, is his legacy Barkas and a Yeti?
Well, it would appear to be, but then who knows if it was his idea to sign those players, or if it was, you know, from Peter Lawwell, or if it was a combination of both. I don't think it was Neil Lennon. So that's this huge question that we all want answered. Who has properly, whose name is next to these players that have signed? Like, I actually looked up, because he joined in June 2019 on a temporary basis, on a kind of like a trial basis. Is that right? If I remember rightly. And then, so he oversaw the incomings of Bolly Bolingoli, Christopher Julien, Hatem Abdel Hamed, Greg Taylor, Luke O'Connell, Toby Oluwayemi, Leo Hield, Jeremy Frimpong, Lee O'Connor.
It's the Marketer's Report. This week, Patrizia Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct to Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on the difficult task of building and retaining consumer trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent. The best thing for us to do is to build a relationship with our consumers. And if those consumers have a relationship with the DJs that are on air, then we want to build on that. House of the Dragon, which was one of our most successful, if not the most successful campaign we've ever done for a show, audio was a core part of that.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. Not just a media company, iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
92% of households that start the year with Peloton are still active a year later.
92% because of a bike?
Not just bikes. We also make treadmills and rowers.
Oh, let me guess, for elite athletes only, right?
Nope. It doesn't matter if you're an avid exerciser or new to working out. Peloton can help you achieve your fitness goals. 92% stick with it. So can you. Try Peloton bikes, tread, or row risk-free with a 30-day home trial. New members only. Not available in remote locations. See additional terms at onepeloton.com/home-trial.
Jonathan Afolabi and Liam Burt. That was his roll call for that summer. And then in the January transfer window, Patrick Klamala, Ismail Assoro, and that's it.
Is that right? So, yeah. I mean, I'm saying, maybe I'm being harsh, I'm saying Barkas and Ayeti, then you throw in Frimpong, who's been a success, and obviously he's made the club money. Julien has been a success. It's been unfortunate with injuries. Soro, I believe, will continue his development and become a success. So am I being harsh, or, you know, is it because it's so fresh in the memory, Declan, Barkas and Ayeti coming in, £10 million worth of signings, it doesn't happen. The goalkeeper situation, when you're sitting watching Scotland and Craig Gordon still pulling off saves and plucking them out the sky like a cat, it's quite frustrating, isn't it, when you look at the fact that we had him at our disposal, we let him go, and now we're not even sure what our number one is or who our number one is.
Yeah, I think that's been one of the main factors of the downfall of our season. You know, if you look at the team that's went on to win the league, they've had consistency in that position and a match-winning goalkeeper. It's something we've not had. We've changed it so much, from Barkas to Bain to Hazard, back to Barkas, back to Bain. it's just been a position. It's been a disaster. But I think in Nicky Hammond, it just shows you how disjointed we were as a football club. Mm. That we had a manager that wasn't in sync with his coaches and ultimately not in sync with our head of football operations, because they didn't all go as a collective. I've saw parts of what has failed this season slowly leave the building, which shows you how disjointed it was inside the building.
Yeah, absolutely. As you said there, head of football operations, JP, does this open the door for an announcement, and do you think it will happen before the end of this week? It has to happen, 110 days to go.
Yeah, surely, surely it will. I mean, that, you know, they obviously are just doing this sort of the diligent thing and allowing an announcement to happen, dust to settle, and then it'll be, you know, possibly tomorrow. I don't know if they would do it that soon. I mean, everybody, it seems to be the worst kept secret in Scottish football that Fergal Harkin is going to be the guy coming in. I mean, if it's not him, then I think there'll be a lot of people quite surprised at that. But you just think back to how differently would things have played out if Neil Lennon had got his man in terms of Tommy Johnson? Because was it not Tommy Johnson that was being lined up to come in to help him recruit players? And then Nick Hammond got offered the job instead. So that was a Peter Lowell decision. And Neil Lennon just had to kind of go, oh, okay, then I'll just carry on without my pal. I mean, I know it's his pal, but he's obviously felt he was qualified to do a job with him.
Yeah.
So, I just think back to that picture of like Nick Hammond, Neil Lennon, and Peter Lowell standing outside Lennox Town, you know, with the whole, you know, media handshake with the Celtic strip and everything else. And it's just like that means nothing now, because he's not leaving any sort of great legacy. And it doesn't really pour any great light on the appointment in the first place, because he's not left any sort of legacy or strategy behind that someone else can come and pick up. It's just like a guy that did a job for 17 months and now he's left. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah. I think the best way to describe it is to use the word that Declan's already used, it's so disjointed, it's so fragmented, isn't it? Mm. And it should all be working as one. But before we get the management team in place, we need to get, obviously, the head of football operations or the director of football or whatever the title is going to be, we know what the role is, in place. We think it may well be Fergal Harkin. And once that happens, hopefully things will start to happen quickly in around the head coach role. Declan, when you've heard all the names, you know, we've seen them all coming and going, we've tried our best to discuss as many of them as possible on a Celtic State of Mind. It would appear even today, you know, Jackie McNamara on Sky Sports talking about the possibility of Eddie Howe coming in. Someone pointed out on our WhatsApp group that he's got links to Peter Grant from their days at Bournemouth. Would he be the Celtic link, the Celtic connection that some feel is necessary for a manager or a head coach to you know, lean on as part of the integration into the club? We've heard the Keenan Butt rumours. I find that really interesting, Keenan Butt, because obviously yours truly was in for some stick when I put that tweet out, Harkin, Keane and Butt. And then obviously what happened was, I'm thinking around the lines of Roy Keane appearing regularly on Sky Sports. Now, I don't think he's employed by Sky Sports. I don't think many of these pundits are employed by any one broadcaster. They're freelancers and they get opportunities from various broadcasters to appear on the show, so I'm not quite sure. But you would have thought at some point someone at Sky Sports might have asked Roy Keane the question, and I find I then found it very interesting that they ran with the story. They ran with the story at the beginning of this week around Keenan Butt, and they were asking ex-Celts all around that. So Eddie Howe, Keenan Butt, do you think anyone else is in the running at this moment in time, Declan?
I think there's probably a decent enough shortlist of candidates, which is a good thing. I would hope that the club are doing their due diligence and interviewing a lot of people, because we need to get this right. It can't just be a case of pick a man and go with it. But we need to thoroughly carry out a decent interview process. I would hope that there's more than two candidates up for the job. I think I said right away when Neil Lennon departed that I would like Eddie Howe in. Whether there's anything stopping that at this moment in time, I don't know. We've obviously ran with the Maresca story here due to these links with Fergal Harkin at Manchester City. I hope there's a lot of candidates out there and that the Harkin situation gets sorted soon, because, again, we don't want a head coach coming in that doesn't know anything about the director of football, because as we said earlier on, we want everything to work in sync, and we want a structure and a situation that if anything falls out of place, it can be sorted very quickly.
Yeah, it still runs. You know, if one element of that is to be removed, the whole structure is still in place. What I would ask you, JP, would it surprise you if Celtic were to announce someone that hasn't been name-checked in the press, isn't on an odds checker list, and we just make this announcement, no one's seen it coming? Would that surprise you?
It wouldn't surprise me, no. I fully embraced for that moment, because like we've said before, you know, like, they kept the Dominic Mackay thing under wraps. No one knew about that. And I've not heard anything from any, you know, quote unquote sources that would signify to me that anything's a done deal with anybody that's sort of been mentioned so far. So, and it's not as if we are the oracle of knowledge of managers in world football, you know. There could be somebody that comes out of nowhere, you know, like a Ronnie Dyla or something like that. I'm not saying, you know, of that same level, maybe a higher level, but, well, hopefully a higher level. But yeah, when you mentioned Peter Grant there, the thing about Peter Grant with the Mowbray thing, that's always bugged me, that he is, because I know how, I mean, I'm sure Tony Mowbray was gutted about how it worked out at Celtic. I'm sure he wished it had gone better. But I mean, the fact that Peter Grant was associated with that kind of failure was, it really stuck in my throat, because you know how much Peter Grant loves Celtic. Do you know what I mean? Like, the guy loves it. And if Eddie Howe was to bring Peter Grant in as part of his coaching team, and it was an Eddie Howe decision, I would be all for that, because I'd love to see Peter Grant get another chance at, you know, wearing the badge again in an official capacity, because he's a great guy.
It actually surprised me, JP, when during the Mowbray era, Grant seemed so passive. That's what surprised me. I mean, you know, he was the type of player that he definitely divided opinion when you think back to the, you know, the 90s, particularly Peter Grant. But I was always a big fan, I've got to say. And I think it's because maybe I'm a traditionalist, maybe I'm old fashioned. I always believe that you need to have a hardcore, a nucleus of Celts that have come through the ranks and know the club inside out. Maybe I'm old fashioned. Maybe that thing, that kind of thing, is dying out. I hope for one that it never dies out at Celtic. And I always felt Grant gave us that. Now, I think he himself knew his limitations as a player. But then you watched, in the centenary year, he was a very important part of that team. Broke his leg, of course. And then we had did he break his leg the following season and then missed the Rangers game? I'd need to double check that. He missed one of the finals, didn't he, with a broken leg, the Dundee United or the Rangers one. Someone will correct me on the comments section.
I don't know. Yeah. I know I'm good with memory and stuff like that, but that's that's maybe a bit too niche.
Well, I do recall it, and of course it was a blinding sunny day. Both of the cup finals were. But then when you fast forward to the 1995 cup final against Airdrie, where he's played with an injury for the best part of the game, and he gets the man of the match. Oh, and you can see him wincing when he's running, and he's still throwing himself into tackles. And then after the game, what it meant to him, you could see what it meant to him. And Paul McStay and Tommy Burns. And, you know, dare I say it, on the lap of honour, because I was in row A that day at Hampden, in the lap of honour, you know, you could see what it meant to Pat Bonner, and you could see what it meant to even Charlie Nicholas, who was suited up at that point, just as part of the squad. But, you know, for that reason, I was always a big fan of Grant, and I was happy when he came back to the club in that capacity. But I always felt he was far too passive. Far too passive. You know when people used to say about the body language of Tony Mowbray, we would just be standing there with the arms crossed, leaning against the dugout, JP. I expected Grant to be the firebrand character in that relationship.
He probably just felt like he had to rein it in a bit, you know, because he wasn't the main man. You know, I think maybe there is an element of that with an assistant coach that they don't feel like they can go full pelt at the side and the sidelines. Maybe in the, you'd think they were undermining the manager if they did, but yeah, that scene. By the way, I'm not just saying get Peter Grant in because he's a Celtic guy. He's obviously, you know, he's a respected coach. He's been. Is he actually in work at the moment?
Is it Alaba? Yeah, Alaba boss.
Of course, he's Alaba boss. Yeah, of course, I know that. I knew that. But you know, he's been assistant down south to quite a few decent managers. I can't remember what he was at Bournemouth, but. Like I said, if Eddie Howe wanted to to bring him in, then it wouldn't just be advocating it because he's an ex-Celtic player, because he's actually a coach as well. And that scene at the end of the cup final against Airdrie when he embraces Tommy Burns is one of my favourite pictures ever in association with Celtic. Just to see, they were like properly, you know, bear hugging at the end of the game, just like pure passion. It was amazing, and just emotion. It's great.
It was great. You know, I always pinpoint that game as being one of the best games, Celtic games, that I've ever been at JP, and I need to qualify that because the game was rotten. It was a rubbish game.
Oh, terrible, right?
But I always list it, and because of the importance of that victory that day, you know, that was our first honour. It was our first honour since 1989 when we beat Rangers in the cup final, and it was so important. It was so important for us to win that game, and I always look back fondly on it. With regards, you dropped the name of Ronnie Dial in there, so let's have a wee chat about Ronnie. I think Declan looks back fondly on Ronnie Dial. Interestingly enough, I brought this up just the other day on the bulletin. The Norwegian squad that I was watching the other night, and I was watching Chris Iyer with some interest. There's four of that squad that are Ronnie Dial prodigies. Four of them. Chris Iyer, Martin Odegaard, who's the wonder kid who's at Real Madrid, currently on loan at Arsenal. He's the captain of the national side. Ivar Fossum and Tokmak Nguyen. They're all Ronnie Dial players. And you look at that, you look at the Arsenal side with Kieran Tierney and Odegaard starring week in, week out, and you think back to the Ronnie Dial thing, and you think, you know, I would have loved if he had been given the position he was originally offered to JP, and he wasn't the manager or the face or you know, the focal point. I just wish he was allowed to work away in the background at developing players and identifying players. And had he been that figure, he might have still been at the club.
Aye, there's every chance. And it's, we're going into Kevin Graham Parallel Universes chat here, because, you know, how would it have played out if the structure had been in place for Dial to blossom? But yeah, I mean, there's obviously loads of the great things that Ronnie Dial did at Celtic. I mean, I still can't believe he gets slagged for the Ronnie Roar. I loved that. I thought it was great. You know, it was a really good kind of, you know, connection to make with the support, and everybody bought into it, you know.
And Klopp ripped him off, didn't he?
Oh, did he? I didn't know that.
I think Klopp, I
should know that.
You should know that.
Your doppelganger ripped him off.
I didn't know that. But yeah, no, I had a lot of time for Ronnie Dial, and obviously the players that he brought in, I mean, everybody said it. Rodgers picked up the baton from Ronnie Dial and just, you know, kept going what he'd started, and then made things better with his experience.
I think so. And again, we've spoken about some of the players who were involved as successful parts of Brendan Rodgers' side, and the fact that they were brought in and they were nurtured by Ronnie Dial, such as Callum McGregor, of course, and the aforementioned Kieran Tierney and Chris Iyer being three such examples. There is actually it's only a rumour at the moment. I thought it was confirmed, but it is only a rumour that Patrick Kilmala is going to join up with Ronnie Dial in New York. So I'm not sure if that's a permanent deal or if it's a loan deal. But my biggest concern there is Colin Watt and I did a real run-through, like a deep dive, I think the kids call it, Deck. You can keep me updated on that, on the Celtic squad. And when we got to the striker situation, because I've already spoken in detail about how concerned I am with the defence, you know, the defence we are going to line up with for that first game in 110 days' time before we bring anybody else in is wafer thin at the moment, JP. But also, when you look at the strikers, we're all kind of resigned to the fact that Eduard is going to leave. He's still starring for the France under 21 side at the age of 23, which I find quite amusing, scoring goals left, right and centre. We're going to lose him. There's a question mark over Lee Griffiths, who might be used as a make-weight for Ferguson to come from Aberdeen. And of course, there's this chat around Kilmala going to New York. Now, if all these things were to happen, and it seems likely, and we'll talk about Griff in a few moments, our strikers will consist of Albion Ayeti and the big man Bayo when he comes back from Toulouse. Now, Declan, we're talking about the legacy left by the head of the football operation. When your squad is left in such disarray, as has just been described, then surely, yeah, Peter Lawler has to take his share of the blame, as does Neil Lennon, and so does Nick Hammond. And to be fair, for us to move on, all three of these figures did have to leave Celtic Park.
Yeah, they did. I think it was past the point of any sensibility that they could still remain in place. You know, if you look at the situation that we do find ourselves in now, it's appalling that it's been left in this situation. Whether we won 10 or whether we lost 10, it should never have got to this, because, you know, a football club can't live in the past. It needs to look forward constantly. And that is obviously apparent to see that it's not been what we've been doing. You've also got Afolabi that might come back there, Paul, from Dundee, could be considered in the mix too. But again, you know, a £5 million striker we've brought in that's not did anything that we probably expected. Bio at Toulouse, you know, he's not playing in Ligue 1, he's second division France. What is he going to do when he comes back? And again, a striker coming back on loan from Dundee, it doesn't really fill you with much excitement. So it's a department that I certainly worry in, because, you know, can we replace Odson Edouard? We obviously were very lucky that we replaced Moussa Dembele so quickly. But in terms of a top quality striker like that, there is not many out there that you can get cheap. So it's a position I really worry about.
Well, this is the thing. What do you get for £5 million? Do you get Barkas? Do you get a Yeti? And if that's the case, then you need to push that level up to what you get for £9 million. And our experience shows a few years ago what you got for £9 million. What do you get for it now? So, JP, we're looking at the possibility of Klamala going to New York. There was also a suggestion that Celtic turned down an offer for Edouard at the beginning of the season from Inter Milan. That's come from an Italian journalist, that Inter Milan were interested in signing Edouard. There's also the suggestion that Lee Griffiths will finally depart Celtic Park and he will be used in a transfer where it's a player plus cash deal for Ferguson, Lewis Ferguson, coming to Celtic. So there's so many questions I need to ask around that whole situation. Eddie's on his way, I'm pretty sure he is. Will he be the biggest loss of all to this squad, do you think? Or has his performances over the last year made it a little bit easier for his departure?
This week on The Marketer's Report, Patrizio Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on building trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all, every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the data you need to grow. Go to iHeartResults.com for more. This week on The Marketer's Report, Patrizio Spagnoletto, Global Chief Marketing Officer, Direct-to-Consumer for Warner Brothers Discovery, weighs in on building trust.
Trust is a really hard thing to build and a really easy thing to destroy, and we have to be very respectful about that. Our partnership with iHeart has really helped us build that trust and that relationship with the on-air talent.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all, every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the data you need to grow. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Well, I think Scott Brown will be the biggest loss to this squad for everything that Scott Brown brings, not just on the park, you know. I've not spoken about Scott Brown leaving Celtic officially. I know it was in the Stars before last Thursday, but yeah, I'm just gutted that Brown's leaving in the way that he is, and also that even regardless of how the season's panned out, that we're not going to be able to give him a farewell at the ground, you know. Well, it's like you said the other day, so many things will have changed by the time we come back to the ground that it will almost just seem like we've been in a kind of Bobby Ewing, sorry for our younger viewers there, but Bobby Ewing kind of scenario,
yeah,
and, you know, from the 80s. And, you know, Scott Brown's suddenly in an Aberdeen strip and there's no ovation, there's no farewell, there's no kind of speech in the middle of the park. I mean, all of that is, you know, surely would have been expected to happen, but it's just not. So Griffiths leaving to go to Aberdeen, it would be weird to see that as well. But you have to think that maybe it is time for Griffiths. And again, if he wants to move on to pursue a new challenge, then it's definitely time for him to go. I don't think he was one of the agitators that Lennon was speaking about at the start of the season. Highly unlikely that he was, but you've got the wage problem there. Whether Aberdeen will be able to match the wage that he's on at Celtic, is there's no way they will. I mean, so he'll need to take a pay cut. But I mean, he's, what, is he 30 now?
He's 30. Yeah. I was thinking about it yesterday, JP. You mentioned Brown there because you didn't have the opportunity last week to talk about Scott Brown. Mm-hmm. But obviously, you know, you think about, right, Shea Logan's going to Hearts. I'm sure that's just a coincidence.
No, that was in the contract.
But Scott Brown is undertaking two roles. So, you know, you've got two wages to play with. So that's probably how they've managed to do a deal with Scott Brown, as well as the fact that he wanted to get into the coaching side of things, of course. But in terms of trying to finance the deal for Brown, I can see how they've done it. When it comes down to Lee Griffiths, they're maybe looking at some of their loan players going back to their parent clubs and being able to accumulate the wages that costs to bring in Lee Griffiths. I'm still of the belief, Declan, tell me if you agree or disagree, that if Lee Griffiths was to go to a club like Aberdeen and he was to play 40 games in a season, and I don't know how likely that is, by the way, because he's not done that in the last three seasons. He's averaging 25 games a season for the last three seasons at Celtic, and we know that's not all down to form and it's not all down to physical fitness. There's been mental fitness issues as well. But if he was to play 40 games in a season, would you expect him to be able to be as prolific as a 20 goal a season striker? He's done it wherever he's gone. Regardless of who he's played for, be that Hibs or Wolves, you know, Livingston, Dundee, he has always had that prolific goal scoring of more than a goal every two games.
I think it just depends on what Lee Griffiths you get, Paul. I mean, you know, we went into one of the most important seasons in Celtic's history and he wasn't allowed to go to France for pre-season training, which, you know, stinks a bad attitude and not working for the manager, the fact to get left behind. So if you get that Lee Griffiths, I'd probably tell you no. If you get the Lee Griffiths that was turning up for Ronnie Dyla, then yes, because, you know, on his day, whenever he's putting his mind to it and he's right up for it, he's a good goal scorer. And that's been proven by his Celtic record, you know. He's topped 100 goals for the club. He contributed a lot. He'd certainly be a decent enough addition to Aberdeen if the attitude's right and he's playing regularly. So I think it all depends on what Lee Griffiths you get, but in my opinion, I think it's time to go. I think he's let us down this season badly in terms of just, well, not being at it, really.
The big thing is, I think back, obviously, to the last game we were all at, he scores a hat-trick. Leading up to his reintroduction to the Celtic side, you know, every time Lee Griffiths was sent out to warm up, the entire stadium, you know, stood up, cheered him, supported him. But eventually, JP, no matter who you are, eventually your patience runs dry with footballers. And if they haven't, like Declan says, if they haven't stood up this season of all seasons and given 100% to make sure that you're the best you could possibly be, and as a professional footballer at that level, fitness is, it should actually be a prerequisite for that. That should be, there should be no question that you're fit enough to play. We're in April. Is he even fit yet? Is he going to be, you know, he might get a game this weekend because we're playing a team that's not in the same division as us. I'm not going to quite write them off yet. But I think Declan's right in what he says. It is, for me, and I've been a big supporter of Lee Griffiths, if he was to leave, I would think the time is right. I really do. Do you think this all is part of the mooted review, you know, which has obviously resulted in quite a few changes at Celtic? Have they also looked at the playing staff? Are they looking at someone like Scott Brown, even, and Lee Griffiths, and saying, well, this season you haven't done what we would expect and that's why we're allowing you to go?
I'm always a bit mindful about, you know, what has actually happened versus, you know, what's been portrayed to happen, because there's been instances in the past where I've made my mind up about players, Dedrick Boyata being one of them, and then you subsequently find out other things about the Dedrick Boyata situation where maybe wasn't all his fault, you know. Because remember the banner from the Green Brigade and all of that, you know, that actually probably wasn't really deserved of him at that time. And Lee Griffiths is another one, you know. He's made like little sort of comments in the media where he's kind of said, you know, we'll see that park out there, I need to play in it, or see the grass, I need to go out and play in it. And you know, almost making out that he's been doing his bit. I don't necessarily know if I believe that or not, because fact is, yes, he was pictured going in to get a kebab after training one day. What is a Celtic player doing going into a kebab shop, you know, after training? I mean, no one else does it, or no one else did it, so why was he doing it? And that's just one incident. I'm not saying that Lee Griffiths goes to kebab shop equals he is unfit, but you can draw your own conclusions from that, you know, rather than what may or may not have happened. That did happen. So that's one instance. And you know, obviously the not being fit for the pre-season trip and everything else, like even just for working on tactics and stuff like that and rebuilding the Edward Griffiths partnership while they were out there, like yeah. we were robbed of that opportunity to do that and then never really recovered. So yeah, I think I don't like seeing players leave when it feels like it's the wrong time. But everything feels like the wrong time at the moment because of the situation that we're in. We're not getting the opportunity to do the normal things that we would do when players leave. And obviously leaving under the circumstances where we've lost the league is not ideal either. But I mean, he's a Celtic number nine, and a Celtic number nine we should be able to hang our hat on and be guaranteed performances and goals. And we're getting neither of them at the moment from him.
Well, you think about his best season in a Celtic jersey. Yes, it was under Ronnie Dyla. He scores 40 goals. That was 5 years ago. That's the Lee Griffiths that I think we were all pining for, you know, the Lee Griffiths that can score at will from range, out of nothing. The Lee Griffiths that we've seen scoring two incredible goals against England, you know, that was the Lee Griffiths we were all pining for. But slowly and surely we realised, I think, that we were never going to get that Lee Griffiths back. So the time may well be now. It's interesting that, you know, if we were to sell him or move him on to Aberdeen, he may well be a make weight to bring in Lewis Ferguson. So it also shows you how much his value has plummeted as well. You know, what does that mean he's worth? £1.5 million, £2 million, you know, that for me is a testament to the real downfall of Lee Griffiths over the last few seasons at Celtic. And it's unfortunate, but we are in a time of change. So I would be hoping that we have plenty of other options lined up. Let's have a look at some of the comments coming in via YouTube, Facebook and Twitter. I keep saying this, but if you are watching it on YouTube, make sure you subscribe. The subscribers are growing by the day. Lloyd Jepson, welcome back to the show. Afternoon, how is it going? Well, who knows? Who knows how it's going? I've heard all the rumours. Treble, the changes are coming very slowly, however. So we're on form today. Caplow Mark, without a doubt, there is movement happening. Hammond resigning is clearing the path for the new coaching structure. It looks imminent. I think it does. I really do. And the vibe I'm getting from most of the viewers, David Bradley being another one, I can go with how. I think certainly, Declan, he would be the most popular choice from what I'm seeing from the Celtic fans. What do you reckon?
I think he is the most popular choice, and he ticks two boxes. He is a big name that will put bums in seats and make people buy season tickets. And he's also a young coach with new, fresh ideas in terms of the modern game. We saw what he did at Bournemouth. And I think he would be a really popular option for Celtic to go with. As I say, he ticks the two big boxes that I think everybody's wanting to do. And in terms of a new structure, I think he'd be the man to slot in there. And again, something else we keep talking about on here, in the market, you've banged on about this, Paul, Brexit, COVID, we're not going to be able to go out and buy French players, we're not going to be able to go out and buy other European players, it's going to be British and Irish-based players, and again, I think how's the man to know that market too?
Absolutely, you've got to consider that. I mean, the permit situation is going to be completely different. We used to dip into the transfer market and, you know, it was a hit or a miss, let's be fair. I mean, some of the names that JP ran through earlier on, you're trying to say, well, how many of them were successes, JP? Maybe two. And that was probably six or seven players that you mentioned over the last couple of years. Treble, they have stalled on announcements this long. What's it going to take to get the news that we all want? Several departures already and no sign of new faces. Well, what I would say to that is I'm pretty confident now. You know, 7 days is a long time in football, JP, but we're sitting here last week saying that, you know, maybe after the international break, Nick Hammond will be gone. It's opening the door to Fergal Harkin. You're not going to expect the management team, coaching team to be announced until Harkin's in place. So I do see it as progress.
I mean, there's no question that you have to, you know, relieve someone of their duties or that person leaves of their own volition before you can progress with, you know, replacing them and bringing other people in. So I obviously, Nick Hammond leaving surely signals a sign that changes are on the way. Yes, we would have all liked it sooner, but there'll be reasons why, and I can't see them being negative reasons. Surely they're only going to be positive reasons, you'd like to think. And it just made me think there as well. I was trying to think of a time when we've brought in a glut of players at the same time and paraded them all at the same time. And there's one particular one that sticks out, but for the life of me, I can't remember who they were. But at some point within the last 15, 20 years, we've had a parade of new signings that have all signed at the same time. Because it was, I remember thinking it was really sort of strange seeing, you know, more than one player or even more than two players being paraded. So there's a good chance that will happen again this summer. It's just like, meet our new signing.
11.
Yeah. I am 11.
Potentially, I think back to the centenary season where it was, even Mick McCarthy was almost being unveiled as a new signing, even though Davy Hay had signed him. It was Davy Hay's last signing before he left, but then Billy McNeil brought in Billy Stark, Chris Morris, Andy Walker, and I remember the picture of them all standing on the pitch at Celtic Park, fully dressed in the new centenary kit with Billy McNeil in front of them in that really smart Celtic tracksuit, the silver and green one. But they really play it out now, don't they? Because they want to have every single one of them needs to have an announcement on social media and getting the traffic. And so they play it all out. So even if they've got three in the bag, they'll probably do it individually anyway, JP.
Yeah, they will. They'll give them all their moment in the sun. And let's hope they're good enough players to deserve their moment in the sun on that particular day to get the announcement and everything else. Because yeah, we need established players brought in. We don't need projects. You know, we need guys coming in that have got experience. I'm not saying 33, 34 year olds, but we need guys coming in at, like, you know, 24, 25, 26, in the mould of maybe a Scott Sinclair, you know, that kind of guy that's maybe not had the right chances at the club he's been at. And you know, because we're not going to go in and pay top dollar for, you know, first team players down in the English Premier League. So, aye, I'd say that.
First team ready for Celtic, certainly. Interesting point coming in from Boheed's insight here. I would think Scott Brown would have a major say if Griffiths went to Aberdeen, as he would have a better idea of his state of mind. Now, talking to Scott Brown, do you think that Lewis Ferguson, Declan, is the man to add the steel that we'll miss when Brown leaves the club? Do you think Ferguson's the man to step in?
Listen, he's a young, hot Scottish talent. When I've watched him against us this season, I've not been too impressed. But, you know, there's certainly a player in there that could develop, and it would certainly put it up one other side of the city. So I'm up for it if he's to be the man to come in. But again, you know, we do need to look at the SPFL and look at who are the better players in the league, and he's probably one of them. And again, could you possibly see him form a partnership with David Turnbull in the midfield? It'd be quite tasty.
It would, and again, it goes back to that argument, Declan, that you know, for some time we haven't really been bringing in the Scottish talent. We've missed out on a few. I don't want to mention them again, scoring goals for Scotland the other night. But you know, Turnbull is key to this, because he's shown that the transition from a team within the Scottish Premiership can be done. And not only that, it's not as though he's just fitted in. He's been an absolute standout, David Turnbull. And you hope that, you know, should someone like Ferguson, I know a lot of people like the Lukey Campbell at Motherwell as well, if these players come into Celtic, you would hope that, you know, the adjustment period that we've seen a lot of the new signings struggling with isn't going to be as bad, you know, when they're coming in. JP, this is a great point from Graham Kennedy. I can actually picture this image in my mind. Did Wim Janssen not bring in a raft of new players? And it was
Dan Jackson.
Mm-hmm. Burley, I think Mahe was in that picture.
Yeah.
And I think Larson was probably in that picture as well. And they're all standing together on the pitch. So, yeah. I remember that one, Graham. We're going to have two or three of the pictures, I think, this pre-season as well. So Lee Griffiths in a Celtic jersey, Scott Brown in an Aberdeen jersey, rather. Scott Brown in an Aberdeen jersey. When it was announced, Man City were telling us that Aguero was going to be getting a statue outside the Etihad. And I know that a lot of people have said to me that if anyone deserves a statue, it should be Jimmy McGrory, you know, the top goal scorer of the club, or Fergus McCann. The Bonnet should get a statue or a stand named after him. Do you think we'll ever do something for Scott Brown? Is it only after the event that you look back and you appreciate what he's done for us, Dec?
I think it depends, Paul. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see Scott back at Celtic Park as manager one day. So I think we'd probably wait until that. We get past that point. I think there's a lot more people in Celtic's history that at this point in time are more deserving of a statue, but I still think you've not seen the last of Scott Brown at Celtic Park anyway.
when you look at the performances of Kieran Tierney, JP, and he was on last week talking about the influence of Scott Brown on Kieran Tierney's career, his early career. You know, you always used to watch him wearing the t-shirt and everything because Scott Brown was wearing the t-shirt no matter how cold it was, and he's carried that on to his time at Arsenal. The big question I asked it last week is all around his stepping up even further from the level that he's at the moment. I see a maturity in him when he plays for Scotland that it's quite clear to me that he has developed even further since he's left Celtic Park. Do you think he can make another step up, JP? Because there's rumours that Man City might be looking at him.
Oh God, I don't want him to go to Man City. That would be troublesome for me if he was to go there.
You're a Man U fan, aren't you?
Yeah. I'm a Man U fan. I'm a Celtic supporter. Let's clarify that. I don't support Man United because I can't. I don't live in Manchester and I don't have a season ticket. But Manchester United, I've got a place for them in my heart. I was born in Wythenshawe. I have a right to support Manchester United or to be a fan of Manchester United. Anyway, I don't want to see Kieran Tierney at Man City. I would love to see him at Manchester United if he was going to go anywhere or in a different league entirely, because I just associate Man City with kind of mercenaries, and I don't want to consider Kieran Tierney a mercenary. But funnily enough, my mate Brendan was texting me this morning, and he's an Arsenal fan. Just saying how amazing Kieran Tierney was. And I was like, well, yeah, I mean, I watched him along with the rest of the Celtic support week in, week out while he played for Celtic. And it was glaringly obvious that he was on a completely different level to the majority of the players that he was playing alongside, and that he would have no problem at all. And I think injuries aside down there, he would have done it a lot sooner at Arsenal because, you know, he's only doing now what we all knew he could do while he was at Celtic. You know, like, one of my favourite recent goals for Celtic is Tierney's up at Pittodrie when he ran the full length of the pitch to celebrate with the fans, and it was just, oh, it was absolutely glorious, you know, because you just seen him sprinting back to us, and he was like, I'm going to go and celebrate with him, and it was amazing. It was a really great day. So yeah, Tierney is world class, I agree.
I was going to ask your thoughts on that, because I remember when he left, and I had a discussion with Kevin Graham at the time, and I asked the question, is this his level? Is this the maximum point that Kieran Tierney can get to? And what I meant was, you know, can he make a move out of English football? Can he go to one of the bigger clubs elsewhere? Can he move? Who knows where that would be that, you know, Spain or Germany? Could he step up even further? And I think there was a wee bit, Kevin might correct me, I think there was a wee bit of doubt in Kevin's mind. I think he's seen Arsenal as being one of the top clubs in England, and that was his level. You're talking about Man City. I find that quite funny as well, JP, because, you know, my interest in English football, I've spoke about it quite a bit on here, it goes up and down depending on the eras. And, you know, I've always had an affinity with Liverpool, and I think that goes way back, and I've spoken about the connection that the clubs had, or the fan base he certainly had, around the Hillsborough disaster and various other things that's happened between the clubs over the years. I've always had that affinity with Liverpool, but the English club that I've seen in person more than any other is Newcastle. I've gone to more Newcastle games than any other club, and I think it's a shame that you look at Man City and you're kind of like, you know, it's a sellout almost, you know, because I think Man City is being this team that was supported by Nolan Liam Gallagher, and they were both wearing the Umbro Man City jerseys with brother on the front page of the NME in the mid-90s, and they probably had like one star player in Georgie Kinkladze, but the rest of the team is made up of people like Jerry Craney. That's the Man City I like to remember, you know. I thought they were a bit grittier back then. They were almost like the kind of more left field side, so it's kind of gone full circle with Man City, is it not?
100%. I've said this a few times, if a billionaire sheikh came in and bought Celtic and we started signing all these like ridiculous players, I would not be into that at all. People in the comments may go, ah, of course you would. No, I wouldn't, because it would dilute what the club's about for me, and we suddenly would be operating at this almost false level of of an idea of a club. I would not be a fan of that at all. And not seeing players, I know that we're not seeing a lot of Scottish players coming through, but we'd see even less if that happened, because we'd just be going out and spending, you know, 40-50 million on a right back and from Brazil or something like that. And it's just doesn't do it for me. But interestingly, you say about the Newcastle, I was at the 4-each game, Newcastle 4.
Arsenal, I was there. Right. I was there. Yep, I was at that game. 4-0 at half time to Arsenal. For me, the best player on the pitch that day was Jack Wilshere. He was brilliant. That's when he really came to my attention that day. I spoke about that game last week. I was at that game 4-each.
Jake Teote's goal in the last minute or near the end was just, that was his only goal, I think. And well, certainly for Newcastle, it was his only goal.
Yeah.
He caught it so sweet in the left peg into the bottom corner. And the whole place just went completely bananas.
Well, I'm going to have to take your word for that because me and my mates left at half time.
You did, nay.
Yeah, we did. And the second half was getting piped into Sky Sports in the Strawberry Bar in Newcastle, just across from the stadium. So we missed one of the best comebacks in Premiership history.
Oh, man.
Because we were so... Anyway, I'm not a Newcastle fan. I just used to like going to watch Newcastle. Because, you know, I actually do like the fan base. I really like the fanatical aspect of Newcastle United. I just think they're a very emotional club and there's not many of them around, you know, and I just think that it's easy enough to go down to it. I like the atmosphere and a few years used to go down. I was at that game, I kid you not, JP, and we left at half-time, which was something of a regret.
I would like Tierney to go to Germany or Spain and have a reason to go and watch him go and play over there, you know, because if he went to Man City, I wouldn't be going to watch them. I'd like to go down and see him play for Arsenal before he leaves there, if he does leave there. But we need to get back to the games first. and when that will be, we'll find out.
Absolutely. A couple of other discussion points before we get on to the Falkirk preview for this weekend. There's been a racism summit for Scottish football in the last few days, not before time, but I think I'm going to go back to my John Barnes interview that a lot of people listened to back in the day. It was quite controversial in that I felt John Barnes put over some tremendous points in terms of dealing with racism in society, not just in football, but he would not take on board the anti-Catholic, anti-Irish prejudice that many people in Scotland suffer on a day-to-day basis. And John Barnes wouldn't accept that that's as big a problem in our communities and in our regions as racism is elsewhere. He refuse to believe that it is a form of racism. And I know that, you know, up here and people like Declan are well aware, you know, you call it out and it's dealt with in the same way. So if we're going to deal with racism, I think we also need to deal with that aspect in Scottish society and in Scottish football. Declan McConville might be more of a political point. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, 100%. I know Jeanette Finlay's had a lot of good work on this too in terms of the campaign of call it out. You know, anti-Irish, it's not sectarianism, it's racism. I mean, we dress it up as sectarianism in this country, but it is racism and it needs to be challenged. And I think it's something in Scottish society that we've learned to accept. You saw some of the graffiti and walls after Rangers won the league and some of it was absolutely appalling. It's stuff that should not exist in the 21st century. So I think it's something that as a country that we certainly need to look at, because it just doesn't get treated in the same way. And I think it is just as bad, you know, the T word that we get branded at as a lot is not nice, it's derogatory. And it's a term that shouldn't exist in modern 21st century Scotland. So I think when we are talking about racism, yes, it's important to look at the other issues around Scottish society with racism, because religion is one of them that gets it a lot here. Not just the colour of your skin, for people that regularly attend mass or whatever, they're subjected to some horrific abuse, and that shouldn't be the case.
No, absolutely. But, you know, I'm not taking away from the developments and the progress that's been made, JP, in relation to tackling racism. But in Scotland, certainly in further afield, it's something that we need to look at. You just can't decide we're going to deal with that prejudice, but we're not going to deal with anti-Irish or anti-Catholic prejudice, which we see far too often. Declan used a term there that you tend to become used to it. But now we're taking a stand against it. We're saying, you know, it's not acceptable and it needs to be called out time and time again. You've had some players coming out. James McLean famously comes out and speaks about it. Neil Lennon, the now departed Neil Lennon, spoke about it also in this country. So it is an important point that we just can't bury, is it, JP?
No, and I was just thinking when Declan said the T word, I was like, which one? They've got a couple for us, which are both unacceptable. And yeah, I saw the same banners that he was talking about, and it's deplorable. And I actually watched the Finding Jack Charlton documentary the other day, or 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And I never really twigged that what he did for Ireland was restore a sense of pride and, you know, changing the narrative, I think, on how people viewed the Irish people, because it shows you a couple of clips in the documentary of Bernard Manning and some other English comedian just making blatantly racist jokes about, like, if you were to say what they were saying about a black person or a woman or whatever, you know, they would be, you know, hiked off the stage. But, you know, back then it was almost like, oh, it was all right to say that. And then the guy that was, you know, doing the commentary over it was just basically saying it was racism. And Paul McGrath was brilliant. He was just like, you know, if someone calls me the N-word, me and him are going to be fighting. And I was like, Paul McGrath, you would not mess with Paul McGrath. Absolute.
Loved him as a player. Loved him.
Imagine him at Celtic. Oh
well, there's a couple of occasions, I think we've mentioned it a few times on here, JP, a couple of occasions where that was in the mix. You know, that move almost happened once under Billy McNeil, once under Liam Brady, his former international teammate. But anyone out there who likes a football book, who likes an autobiography, Back from the Brink, the Paul McGrath story, will blow your mind. What a book. Probably, in fact, the best football book I've ever read. Paul McGrath's.
Really?
Aye. Without a doubt. Unbelievable. Yeah, it is. I've read a lot. There's a lot of formulaic football books out there. You read them for research mainly, JP, but I think the Paul McGrath one's up there. It is superb. You've got to read it.
I could probably challenge that with the Lorenzo Amoruso autobiography, which is hilarious and probably unintentionally as well, but like some of his patter is absolutely unbelievable.
Was there no like staged images of him and all that for his book?
Aye,
Amoruso, yeah. There was. Aye.
A very high opinion of himself, put it that way. it's the print's about this big as well, so you could probably read it in about half a day.
It's all about the photos, with Big Lorenzo, I'm sure. let's look ahead to Falkirk. Declan, give me a wee prediction about Falkirk. Are we going to see a few changes, do you think? I think Kennedy's played it safe with his lineup so far. Is he going to give some guys game time? And how do you see the result going?
I think he needs to mix it up a wee bit. Obviously, you've got a couple of guys coming in off the back of this, playing 3 international games. I know Callum McGregor never started the other night for Scotland and Israel, but guys like that, maybe take a wee rest out, bring a few in, freshen it up a bit. I would hope to get a win and try and get to the end of this season unscathed after this international break. This is the last one, so it's a decent run of games. I still think John Kennedy will be wanting to do his very best to try and put his name in the mix still. So 2-3-0 to Celtic, I hope. It'll be quite strange to watch Celtic on a Saturday night again. I've not did that for a while. I think the last time he did that was Airdrie at home in the Scottish Cup a couple of years ago, so that'll be a wee bit of a different experience. But yeah, 2-3-0 to Celtic.
2-3-0, says Declan. JP, are you going to share that enthusiasm and that positivity?
Do you know what? I would far favour a good performance over an emphatic win, you know, because we've had emphatic wins when we haven't played that well, and I'd rather see the team playing well and win, you know, 1-0 or 2-1 or something like that. Ooh, Paul McGrath, amazing. I'd rather see that than I'd just love to see us play good football, because it's not been great, has it, really? We've not, you know, we could have probably scored a bucket load against Dundee United, but we didn't. I just want to see, you know, players playing, enjoying themselves. I know it's not the greatest of circumstances at all at the moment, still playing in front of empty stadiums, playing after we've lost the league. You know, the Scottish Cup does feel a bit like a kind of afterthought, because it was only just been recently decided that it's actually going to happen. So, yeah, I obviously hope and think we should win. I mean, I don't know much about Falkirk at the moment and whether they're in any great shape. Are they? Are Falkirk doing all right at the moment?
Well, I just think with a team like Falkirk, JP, when you're looking at the distance in terms of the league, the league placings, how many placings are they below you? Mm. And if you were going into a game against Hamilton, let's say, and no disrespect, you would be expecting at home to be winning that game comfortably 2-3-0. So then you go down a couple of divisions and, you know, that's what you should expect, regardless of how well they're playing. Although, you know, if you want to look any further than Tynecastle to see that if you don't turn up on the night, you know.
Exactly, yeah, we need to turn up. We can't just go there thinking, oh, well, it's just in a routine victory, because they will be absolutely fired up and they'll know that we are vulnerable. So, you know, if they are playing, you know, at the limit and the peak of their potential, then, you know, we need to be at ours as well, because you can't just sort of take it as read that we're going to beat any team, hit or miss. Oh, Falkirk. Yeah.
Okay. He's our Falkirk correspondent, is Kevin Graham, coming in for a late addition there. Kevin, thanks for that. So JP wants a good performance and Declan wants a good emphatic win for Celtic. We'll be here to cover the game, absolutely, 100%. And I will be watching the women's on the Sunday afternoon, without a doubt. I know that I'm a big fan, having spoken to them and all that kind of stuff, Dec. So I'll certainly be taking a break from the Easter eggs. There you go, I've sold it. I've sold it to you, right?
Get away from the eggs.
You've got to get away from the eggs. Now, it's always a pleasure on the Axon Bulletin. Thanks, everybody, for your support. Coming in, watching the Bulletin, getting involved in the comment section. You can do that on Facebook, Twitter, and on YouTube. You can also message us. If I haven't got back to any messages, I will catch up with them. So thanks for getting involved. And all that's left for me to say is Declan McConville, JP Mason, thank you once again for joining me on A Celtic State of Mind.
Message and data rates may apply. Guys, got hair loss? I know what you're thinking. Should I shave my head, comb it over, wear a hat? Just stop. This isn't 1970. Keep your hair and your confidence, because Bosley, America's number one hair restoration experts, can give you your real hair back permanently. Check them out today, because they're giving away an absolutely free information kit and a free gift card to anyone that texts EASY to 203203. Dude, you don't have to look like your dad, because this isn't your dad's hair loss treatment. People all over the country trust Bosley because they're ahead of the curve. They use the latest technology to give you your real hair back. And the best part? Bosley's permanent solution is protected by the Bosley Guarantee. Let Bosley show you for free how awesome your hair could look with an absolutely free information kit and a gift card for $250 off. Text EASY to 203203. That's BASY to 203203.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all, every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Sports Social Podcast Network. 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 Sports Social Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.